Team 33, the football magazine show for the football purists.
Oh, come on, it has! They had one team in the quarterfinals.
Live at 9 p.m. every Friday on OTB Sports Radio, on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Now, time for us to have a chat about football, because it is a pretty busy period, including those EFL Cup quarterfinals coming up over the next weekend, or the next couple of days, I should say, and Premier League back at the weekend. We're joined now by Daniel Harris. Daniel, good morning to you.
Hiya.
We were having a chat, Daniel, about Chelsea just a few minutes ago when we were going through the sports news. They beat West Ham 3-0, ending this run of a couple of defeats that they had coming into that fixture. Tammy Abraham scoring again twice last night. They go back up to fifth place. What's your assessment of Chelsea now that these new signings have had a bit of a chance to settle over these first 14 games or so?
I think ultimately it looks to me like it's all predicated on one guy, and that's Hakim Ziyech. They won last night, Chelsea, and they didn't really play well. And the thing that's been noticeable is that it all seemed to work when Ziyech was fit, and now Ziyech's not fit, and it's all a bit of struggle. And I think he is the player who opens everything out for them. He's got vision, he's got confidence, he's got skill. He's the man that makes it happen, and it just doesn't look quite like it all works when he's not there. But I should say that I'm quite surprised that this has happened, that Thiago Silva seems to have made a really big difference to the defence. And I'm quite surprised, because he's not someone I ever thought was even that good when he was at his peak. But he's also come in and he's made a significant difference, stopping them conceding goals, which allows them to win games like last night when they don't play particularly well.
I wonder how much of a concern Timo Werner's form is going to be, though, Daniel, at this stage. 10 games now in all competitions for Chelsea where he hasn't scored. He admitted at the weekend the physicality of the Premier League has surprised him somewhat. You know, Frank Lampard backed him again last evening, but when you've got Tammy Abraham coming in and scoring goals, you've got Olivier Giroud scoring when he's played in Europe, maybe that just kind of lessens the pressure on Timo Werner a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. Abraham and Giroud aren't going to score the goals that are going to make Chelsea League champions, which is where they want to get to. It won't be this season, I wouldn't have thought. I guess they hope that Werner will be good enough. He's an interesting player, Werner, because he kind of wants to play centre forward, but he's not quite a centre forward, and he doesn't quite want to play on the left. So it's not necessarily easy to configure an attack for him, because I think at Leipzig it was different because he was maybe the biggest star in the team, so he could have more scope to do what he wanted, whereas Chelsea, he's kind of one of a team. So where you actually use Werner is not so easy to work out, because he doesn't do everything you'd like a centre-forward to do, but you don't want him on the left because you want him with the ability to score goals and to be involved when the ball gets to the box as much as possible. So he sort of likes to play almost a dual role, like coming off the left a little bit, because that means he's harder to track because he's coming from inside to outside. But again, he's not a left winger, so he's not going to offer you the option of going on the outside. So I think some players adjust to new leagues immediately and other players take more time. And the difference between the ones who are brilliant and the ones who aren't isn't necessarily speed of acclimatization. But I think what Werner is Werner is ultimately a very good player, but he's probably not ever going to be a definitive player. So that's not necessarily, I'm not saying that means he's a bad signing for Chelsea. I think he's a decent signing for Chelsea, but I don't think he's going to be the transformative player. He's going to require lots of things to be going right around him for him to be able to deliver his best.
Yeah, the other game last evening, the half five kickoff, was a 2-1 victory for Burnley against Wolves. Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood getting the goals either side of half time. That moves Burnley out of the relegation zone. They're just 1 point behind Arsenal now in the Premier League table. Arsenal have had a horrible start, Daniel, to the season. You know, 14 games in, only 14 points, just 4 victories during that period. It's their worst start to a season since 1975. What did you make of Mikel Arteta's comments about these percentages of winning games and games that should be won? I think it bemused a lot of Arsenal fans after that defeat against Everton at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I made the same of it as everyone else made of it. But what on earth are you talking about, mate? But I think he's not exuding confidence or competence at the moment. Like, you don't watch him and think, I think you're going to get them out of this, because it feels a lot like the reason they're in this is part is because he's not experienced enough at his job and isn't good enough at his job to be able to make it any different with the players that he has. And make no mistake, it's not possible to do worse with this group of players. They're not a good group of players. That's the most important thing still. But it's not possible to do worse with them. They shouldn't be here. I'm absolutely certain that the board will do everything possible not to fire him. But if in the new year this run of miserableness is still continuing, I think they'll probably conclude that they don't have a choice. And he doesn't... It's when managers say ridiculous things, part of you thinks, well, do they actually believe it? Because managers say those ridiculous things to divert attention away from where they don't want you to be looking. It's just misdirection, really. So if he goes out and says something stupid, then perhaps people will be talking about the stupid thing that he said rather than what his players are up to. Problem being, it seems a lot like he really believes what he's saying. I mean, he says it with feeling, with honesty, and he's not an actor. But he's extremely convincing if he is indeed portraying this role. And I think Arsenal fans will be worried that the stuff that he's saying sounds a lot like stuff he believes, and there's no counterpoint to it. So it's not like Alex Ferguson used to go out, he'd say something ridiculous, and then his team would go and win the next game, and they'd also have won lots of trophies previously. He's coming out, he's talking nonsense, and they've scored, what is it, 2 open play goals in 9 games or something, 10 games. So there's not that counterpoint to the misdirection isn't there.
Daniel, just on Arsenal, I mean, they've got a couple of fixtures coming up that will not arrest the nerves or the pressure on Arteta. They've got City, obviously, in the Carabao Cup, and then Arsenal or Chelsea in the Premier League at the weekend. So we've been having this discussion earlier, and I guess earlier in the season when Arsenal were losing, the talk of relegation was more tongue-in-cheek, that nobody ever thought it was a realistic possibility. Looking at this Arsenal squad now, and I guess the fact that they have the likes of Mesut Ozil sitting on the bench, not even on the bench, in fact, not even in the squad. But is talk of an Arsenal relegation realistic possibility at this point?
Probably not. I mean, it's not something you can ignore because of where they are in the league. And I think one of the other slightly interesting things about the league is that Sheffield United look down. I mean, they have to do something immense to get up from there. And it's very hard to see what West Brom are going to do about this without spending a load of money that doesn't seem like they're going to spend. There's not a lot to work with there. But then the last relegation spot is actually, you've got no idea who's going to end up in that, because all the teams above the bottom two have reasons as to why you think they might stay up. And it seems inconceivable that Arsenal will allow this to go on long enough so that they don't get a better manager in, because this squad is not a relegation squad. It's not a good squad, but it's not a relegation squad. So it would be really, it seems unlikely that it will happen, but at the same time, it's quite hard to arrest the decline. And stranger things have happened. So, I mean, I'm assuming that Arsenal will spend some money in January to make sure that they don't go down. Although, quite who would want to play for this Arsenal who is worth having is a different question. But they should probably be able to find enough that will keep them up. So, yeah, I don't think they'll go down. But you can't ignore the fact that almost halfway through the season and they are looking like a team that could.
Yeah, that Brighton game next week looks perhaps even as crucial as Chelsea and Man City. They play Man City in the EFL Cup this evening. You've got Everton against Manchester United tomorrow. Everton on the back of their victory at the weekend against Arsenal in the Premier League. Daniel, what was your assessment of Manchester United against Leeds at the weekend? You know, Scott McTominay getting 2 goals, plenty of praise from his manager. And generally, they started maybe converting some of those chances which those front players hadn't been doing in recent weeks.
United played pretty well. It felt a little bit like, so even so, what you say about the chance conversion, United should have scored 10 goals in that game. And the lack of ruthlessness in finishing, I think, is still a big problem. When I look at that team, and I know people like to say, well, they struggle to break down mass defences, that kind of thing. I don't see that as a tremendous problem with this team, because it's not something like they're generally just scoring goals now. There are 2 things that need sorting with this team are the defending. And if you watch the Leeds game, you would see that that's something that still needs defending. Like, they could have easily conceded 6. And is the ruthlessness in finishing? Because on another day, Leeds would have scored and made the game much closer than it was because of when the chances occurred. So I thought the United played well. They look like a good team now. And I mean, I've been saying that on here for quite some time, that their top level is a really good level. And I do think they're the second best team in the league. And whether they can go on from here depends on resolving those 2 aspects. Can they stop giving their opponents chances? because they've been getting out of it recently in the league, but that's not sustainable. And can they finish their own chances? And in particular, Anthony Martial used to be, maybe before Mason Greenwood turned up, the best finisher at the club. But since the Europa League semi-final against Sevilla, where his finishing was what one of the major reasons United didn't go through, his finishing seems to have absolutely deserted him. And you can't have that from a centre-forward. Even though Martial played really well in the game and he gives you so much more than just finishes, you can't have a centre-forward who's regularly missing one-on-ones. And I mean, he missed two on Sunday. But in general, Ole got his tactics bang on. And sometimes you feel like the way people talk about that, it's like, well, yeah, it was obvious what you need to do against Leeds, to which the question would be, well, why isn't everyone doing it? But you can see a team growing. Like, they've got options in attack, they've got options in midfield, but the defending is still not good enough, even though you just feel like if someone whispered in Aaron Wan-Bissaka's ear, look over your shoulder every few seconds, that would make a lot of it better.
Want to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a little bit of credit tactically at the weekend too, because as you say, Leeds have been very good against the teams towards the top of the table, but I thought Solskjaer actually deployed the team pretty much perfectly tactically at the weekend. He made sure there was plenty of pace, legs in midfield in terms of McTominay and Fred. Then he had Daniel James to pin Leeds back on the right-hand side. And Manchester United running at Leeds caused them plenty of problems. While Solskjaer has sometimes been questioned about his setup in some of these fixtures, I thought he got a spot on Sunday.
Yeah, he did. I think that if you look Ole all the way through, there's a litany of games in which he's absolutely nailed his tactics. And I think that his understanding of where a team's weak points are is excellent. And you've seen it over and over and over again, where he's come up with bespoke tactics for a game and it's worked. I think what isn't quite right with Ole sometimes, to me anyway, is that he's too negative at the wrong times. And he doesn't have a squad for that. He has a squad that wants to go forward and is at its best when going forward. And that is the best way now of deploying the players that he has. Like, he got it totally wrong in Leipzig because he went into that game inviting pressure on the defence, which isn't good at withstanding pressure. But when he looks at how to hurt the opposition, he very often comes up with the right answer. And what he has to do is he has to allow his team to settle now, I think. It seems that he's back to 4-2-3-1. And there are lots of ways this team can play because they have a lot of good players. But if he's going to settle on 4-2-3-1, I personally prefer 4-3-3. But if he's going to settle on 4-2-3-1, then he needs to just leave that alone and change some players because obviously there are a lot of games coming up and he has a lot of players that he wants to use. But I think often football is overcomplicated in terms of tactics, where really the most important things are the ability and mentality of the players. And if with the players that United have, if you give them the freedom to go out and do their thing, obviously you have to give them some instructions too, and you have to take note of what your opponents might do. But if United go into games with the intention of attacking and using their imagination and actually really committing to it. I watched an old United game against a game they lost actually last week against Real Madrid. I watched the game from 2000. And one of the things that stood out was the simplicity of the way that United played. They generally weren't into like flicks and tricks and only when it was really necessary. But what they did was they picked options, they picked them really early and then they committed to them. And that is one of the things that this team needs to learn. Even against Leeds, they scored 6 goals. But you saw frequently Marcus Rashford would get the ball and instead of taking the first option quickly, he'd try and work a better shooting lane. He'd try and see if there was a better passing lane. You end up getting crowded out. And I think it's the ruthlessness of having the confidence in your ability to see something and act really quickly that was definitely a feature of the best Alex Ferguson teams. And it's something that if this team learned to do that, they will score even more goals than they're scoring at the moment.
Daniel, for all the shortcomings in Manchester United squad over the last number of years, I mean, I have the bench from the most recent game in front of me. So Henderson, Bailly, Alex Telles, Matic, Pogba, Van de Beek, Mata, Greenwood and Cavani. I mean, the strength and depth there, some people arguing on Twitter saying it was probably the best bench of any club team in Europe across the weekend. So Manchester United's strength and depth, though, we've got the great Phil Jones as well to return in the new year. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer hinted at that a week or two ago. But where does this United squad rank in terms of strength of depth of United squads gone by?
Yeah, it's good. The first 11 still needs some attention, but they've got good, when everyone's fit, they've got good options, and that's really the way it should be. And you can't argue with the way that Ole has built it in that aspect. And whilst at the same time also re-energising the youth setup, like where there's lots of players who there are a lot of players currently in the youth setup who United think are going to make the first team. There's Ethan Laird, there's Hannibal Medjri, who Ole bought from Monaco. There's Facundo Pellistri, there's Diallo, who's coming in January. So what you see with United is a club that, when Ole took over, was absolutely on its arse. I mean, it really was. Like they lost the last Mourinho game was a dreadful defeat to Liverpool. But just the players looked miserable. The good players were starting to want to leave. They didn't have as many young players who were coming through. And what Ole has done is he's sorted out that side of it. And he's doing a good job of sorting out the first team. And as you say, he now has options. So, I mean, people laugh when he signed Cavani. They say Cavani is coming for the money, which to me always looked kind of strange, because if you're someone who, I can't even remember how old Cavani is he 34? Who has spent the amount of time that Cavani has spent being an elite level athlete and an elite level competitor and playing in teams that have won trophies, it is possible that you might just turn up and decide to take the money, but it seems far more likely that you're going to want to turn up and compete, because that's what you do. And who wants to turn up at Manchester United and just not do anything when everyone's looking? And so they've got those options off the bench. And if you even think back to last season, they signed Ighalo on loan because they didn't have anyone else and they couldn't find anyone else. And that had to constitute an emergency option. Whereas now the options aren't emergency options. They're options that change the focus of the way that you want to play. So bringing Dan James in for the game on Sunday is a good example of that. Ole wanted something specific and he had it available to him. And so he was able to deploy it, and it also happened to work. But if it didn't work, as you say, he had Cavani on the bench and he had Mason Greenwood on the bench. So that is one of the ways, actually, that Fergie won games towards the end. When his sort of last great team, the 08-09 team, got old, and City had a lot more, were given a lot more money to spend than he had, so had a free run at Yaya Toure, Aguero, at David Silva, players that United might have been interested in if they didn't have the Glazers draining the money. So what Fergie did was he knew that, he knew he couldn't compete in terms of the strength of the first 11, which is why the year that City won the league in 2012, the direct games between the team, you could see that City were a much better team. But what Fergie had was he bought an absolute load of wingers and a load of centre forwards, because he knew that those are the players that will help you decide games when games are tight, when you're able to bring on someone who does something different to what the other players that you had before you did. And United are sort of getting towards that point. They still don't even have any kind of right winger in the squad until Diallo arrives. So I think that will make a difference. But they do now have various midfield options. They have Pulper on the bench at the weekend as well. And various attacking options, which is giving them the opportunity to change games if it's not working, which we saw against Southampton and West Ham a couple of weeks ago.
There's no argument from many circles that Liverpool aren't a better team than Manchester United, and they've impressed without Van Dijk for large portions of this season. Anfield has become a bit of a fortress even without the fans. If you had to get your crystal ball out and look ahead to April or May briefly, do you see a title race this season? And if so, do you see United being a part of that?
I think that if there is a title race, United will be in it. If Liverpool run away with it, then that looks not unlikely at all. That's very possible. But it's strange, because you look at United and you think this is not yet a title winning team. But on the other hand, you look at, they've got so many goals in the squad that they have enough to win most games. And it's kind of nagging at me that a run the like of which United produced from February to the end of last season would probably take them quite close. And they should be better now than they are then, than they were then. So it is nagging at me. It is possible. I mean, they've got some tricky games coming up. They've got to play Leicester. They've got to play Wolves. They've got to play Liverpool. If they were to take kind of 6-7 points out of those, then they would be in with a chance, particularly if they managed to not lose to Liverpool. So I think we'll probably know more about it in the new year. But as I said earlier, I do think United are the second best team in the league. Now, they might be the third best team in the league, to paraphrase Shane Warne, between Liverpool and Daylight. And Liverpool don't have, like, United could do with Liverpool having the difficult games now and United having slightly easier ones, but Liverpool have got West Brom next. Can't remember who they've got after that. And then they've got Southampton away. So I guess that's the game where you might think if Liverpool were to drop points there and United were to win, then they could close the gap. But if United come out of the new year and the gap is still where it is now, 5 points with the game in hand, then they're in with a chance of doing something. But of course, the thing about Liverpool is that they know how to win. They expect to win the title. They know what it takes to win the title. And they know what is necessary to make it happen, because they know they can make it happen. And I think that's what we've seen when they've been without all these players, but it doesn't matter always, because the confidence that they have and the desire that they have to show that they can win is enough to give them the opportunity to win and to make sure that they do win. And you can run out of that sometimes. But at the moment, the confidence that they have from having won is seeing them through, obviously, aside from the quality of the players that they have.
Daniel, thanks a million for joining us this morning. Enjoy the festive football and have yourself a very Merry Christmas over the next few days.
You too, everyone. See you again.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.